And welcome back to episode 162 of the Weekly Tech Wrap. With me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
Well, Carl, we are back again for another great episode. This one, a lineup this week is we've got TikTok to Roku to Epic. Yes, Epic again. Microsoft, but for completely different reasons. And just as we come on air, SpaceX third Starship flight test has completed. Though we're not quite sure what's happened to Starship, but it has been a success. But more on that in just a moment. So, a bit of a no tech rant rumour mill this week, because I don't think there was anything really big on the rumour mill, was there?
I didn't see anything that took my fancy.
Not at all, no. Maybe I've just been too busy 3D printing all the stuff, you know.
3D print everything.
It's got a little bit like that. I'm like, what can I print, you know? Like, you know, it has been a little bit crazy. I was saying to you as we were prepping for the show, I printed a post-it note holder. Other sticky notes are available. And I've got some new black filament that comes out really quite nice, actually. I'm quite impressed with it. So like a nice black matte, nice. Okay. Yeah, it's a pretty smooth finish on it. So it's quite good. But yes, more on the bamboo later. Let's kick off the first story this week then, which is the TikTok ban. Now, if you had listened to some of our early shows going back, back to the Trump era, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be Trump era again. It could be. So
careful. President Trump tried to ban TikTok, didn't he, as part of his crackdown on Chinese tech companies. And we kind of thought that when Biden came to power, that kind of had passed, didn't it? Because it never really got actioned. But it seems now that it's quietly been ticking over in the background. And a new bill has gone through and passed the House. Which is titled, very snappily, Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act.
Wow, it's a mouthful.
Which appears that really, that it doesn't explicitly ban TikTok, but it kind of sets out some precedences, doesn't it? What should happen here around TikTok?
Summary, basically what it is, it says this bill prohibits distributing, maintaining, or providing internet hosting services for foreign adversary controlled applications. So yeah, under this bill, the foreign adversary controlled applications directly or indirectly operated by ByteDance or TikTok or other social media companies that are controlled by foreign adversaries will be determined by the president to be a national security threat. So there's a lot of leeway there, but again, very targeted at ByteDance, TikTok there.
Very much so.
Yeah, it has passed the House of Representatives. It's off to the Senate. If it passes through the Senate, President Biden has already confirmed on X that he has tweeted or X'd or whatever that he will sign it if it gets as far as him.
So at the moment it would prohibit, wouldn't it, or stop these applications such as TikTok that are owned by Chinese organizations from being hosted in the US, wouldn't it?
Yeah, or even used. So basically it also prohibit Apple and Google from hosting the TikTok app in the US. Not necessarily outside the US, obviously, but basically the idea is that they're forcing TikTok or any other party to sell their application to a US-backed company.
I can't help but think if this was around the other way and Chinese companies were forcing American organizations to sell to the Chinese local...
Chinese version of Facebook has to be owned by a Chinese company, there'd be uproar, wouldn't there?
There would, wouldn't there? There would absolute uproar. I mean, look what happened when Russia annexed all over, the Ukraine. Oh, well, sorry, I'll rephrase that.
And
all of the companies that were said they wouldn't do business because, we weren't able to do the sanctions in Russia. And Russia snapped up all of those organizations, didn't it? And said, basically, we're going to rebrand them or sell it, or we're going to force you to sell to the local version of, the Russian entity.
Yeah,
exactly. There was uproar. There really was uproar.
But and now... This just sounds like the US doing the same.
Yeah, I just... I don't know. Maybe I'm misreading this, but it does feel very much the same kind of totalitarian. That's the word. Approach to it,
And obviously TikTok or ByteDance, are saying they're not controlled by the Chinese government. They're not sending data to China. If the Chinese government asked, they would decline, say no. I mean, I don't know how you do that in China, but I'm pretty sure it's what it's the same way around here. If the US government comes with one of those gag orders. I says we need all your data and you can't even speak about it. Generally you do, otherwise you disappear.
Yeah, and this is again, isn't it? Because, you know, TikTok is the kind of poster child for this being a national security problem. And ByteDance, who obviously the company that owned them, as, like you said, have repeatedly tried to say, haven't they? Like, we are nothing to do with this. It's nothing at all. And apparently, according to them, they've never requested any data on TikTok users in the US. And that when I say them, I mean the Chinese government. But if a forced sale comes along, I can't help but wondering, is it really going to help? I can't see what it's going to do.
No, it's not going to help. I don't think it's making any difference.
No. It won't. There was a statement from TikTok, wasn't it, that saying that the reason they went through is it was a ban, wasn't it, basically, and saying that, you know, they were saying that they see there's a huge impact here on the US users. Was it 7 million small businesses, I wrote down, and 170 million Americans who use the service. I mean, that's quite a large chunk of change.
That's a lot, yeah.
When you consider what there's 330 million people in the US, I think, isn't it, something like that?
Yeah.
But the only one that made me chuckle here is that Trump has voiced his opposition to this.
Yeah, he doesn't want it anymore, does he?
No, because he says it would put more power into Meta.
Make your mind up, man.
He's quoted as saying, "If you get rid of TikTok, Facebook and Zuckerschmuck," that was his words, not mine, "will double their business. I don't want Facebook, who cheated the last election, doing better. They are a true enemy of the people."
Oh God! Right. Okay. Yeah.
Is that
he's now got a vendetta that he thinks everyone cheated him out of the presidency, didn't he?
I think that's been ongoing since day one, hasn't
it? Well, it has. Yes. But he'll pin on anyone he can.
I can't help but thinking this is not the right move. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, I'm listening. I'm open to you tell me, like, no, this is the right move. But I can't feel it is.
But we've not, again, like all these things, we've not actually been provided with any actual evidence.
No.
So they're guilty until presumed, presumed innocent? Whatever you call it. Yeah, it's the opposite of what it should be. You're guilty until you prove you're innocent.
But it seems to be that the evidence, what, will they produce the evidence when they ban them? You know? I don't understand. You know, you're right. Is the statement to say, this is the reason behind it? TikTok are terrible because X, you know, and we have uncovered Y. There's none of that at all, is there? Absolutely none of it. It just appears to be is that they might be something to do with the Chinese. Therefore, we really need to stop them doing anything here.
I'd probably argue if they actually had credible evidence that the Chinese government was spying on everyone using TikTok, they've already got the powers under, you know, national security to go out and ban that and do something about it now. We don't need another bill for it.
No, we don't need another bill for it. But this is just putting more power into the government again, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But it won't be long, I suppose, before we see similar things here in the EU, in the UK and the EU, respectively. Mm. But I'm not in favour of this, I have to say. I don't think it's the right approach, you know. And I'd have to go back and listen to my thoughts last time, but I feel that it may have changed my mind. So, talking of security issues, then Roku have announced that they have had a breach, haven't they? And over 15,300 accounts, including stored credit information, have been
accessed.
That's probably the right word. Yeah, I kind of had a question mark next to that in my notes, and I'm like, I'm going to say stolen because it is currently obtained.
So, but yeah, they say they may have got login details. They used login details from previous data breaches, apparently, to do credential stuffing and then gain access to the systems, and then take the 15,000 Roku accounts. But they are selling these on the black market for cheap. I mean, they're 50 cents an account. Say they've got payment details there. They've been trying to use those to buy other subscriptions. not a great look for Roku, is it?
It's not. And this, you know, they according to Roku themselves, they're saying that, you know, full account payment numbers or dates of birth haven't been affected. They've also put in measures to secure any further access or unauthorized access. And also they're asking users who have been affected to reset their passwords. Well, I mean, the you know, wasn't it? What's this? The stable door is You know, nobody should have said, well, it's been the horses bolted or whatever they call it, you know. I was a little bit worried because I am a Roku customer. I tend not to buy anything through their services. I don't think I've got any credit card information stored. But I was waiting for the
you're waiting for that one.
But my email from Troyhound, but it hasn't come through yet. But it you know, it would be, if you are a Roku customer, perhaps it would be recommended to drop across to have I been pwned to check whether or not you have been affected. If you are a customer or a member of the site, I'm sure he's already emailed you out. But it's always a recommendation, isn't it? Pop your email address in there and see what gets there.
Well, exactly. And it seems that talking of, you know, the door after they bolted, Roku have only just brought in two-factor authentication.
There was a time when Roku were pretty cool. You know, they were saying, you know, you kind of had, before the Fire Sticks came out, do you remember the Roku kind of similar set-top boxes? Before Apple TV, you know, really, I say not before Apple TV, but before Apple TV was as functional as it was today, Roku kind of had that space, didn't they? And you had all the services on there. You know, they were one of the first companies to launch a streaming stick, because I remember getting one of those. I remember beta testing the Roku streaming stick, and it was such a beta test that it came in a see-through case. It hadn't had the final production case put in, you know, USB one on the back of TV, and they were quite cool. You know, it was a nice thing, and I've recommended Roku boxes before. The TV that I've got in my dining room that I just use for the kids and like streaming services is a Roku powered TV, which is really frustrating now, because on a random note, you know, like the streaming services in the UK, we've got BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5. The Channel 4 application doesn't do streaming of live TV.
Oh, does it not?
No, because it's got all of, like, the differences, you know, of like, so if you go to the Apple TV version of it, there's a live TV section, but the Roku version of the app doesn't have the live TV option.
Well, that's annoying.
You are telling me. It's a first world problem, but it is rather annoying.
Now it doesn't.
Well, you know, you Google it and you saw, like, I was on Reddit the other day and there were screenshots of the two different versions of it, and like, it's like, that is the same app, but there's just one line difference between, the live, which is really frustrating, because I was trying to watch them the other day and I was like, oh, that's not going to work then, is it? You know,
no. Wait now, get on catch up.
No, but you know, that point about you said there about the credential stuffing piece, that is very common now, isn't it? There's so many breaches happen now. There's so many password kind of leaks that, the you know, on the dark web, you can go off there and, you know, this is, what was it, 50 cents? There's some probably selling for cheaper, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you know, it just seems that you could buy this stuff and you can just create those databases and off you go and brute force stuff. And reality is, you're going to hit something, aren't you? You know, out of 1,000, you're probably going to get 10, realistically, I bet. You know, maybe higher, I don't know. It just feels that this day and age, if you don't have complex passwords for every single account, you're doing it wrong. I stressed that massively, and I you know, reinstalled a password manager with somebody the other day, but it is difficult. You know, I can't deny it.
Yeah, it's a frustrating one for people who are tech savvy to see all these people just use the same password again and again and again, and blame everyone else when they get hacked.
Yeah, and I
to take some responsibility, surely.
I think you have to. And I appreciate people, well, I can't remember that password. No, but that's where a password manager. Now, talking of password managers, and I didn't put this in the show notes, but because I didn't get a chance to read the whole story, but did you see that LastPass had another incident the other day?
Oh, God, no, not again.
Yeah, so LastPass had a, I think they had an issue that took offline, I think, all their accounts or something. There was 404 errors for every customer.
Oh, man. But not a breach?
Not that I'm aware of. I think it was more...
Okay, so they just had a service. Okay, I thought you meant they'd have been breached again.
No. I think they had another service issue.
But I mean, even if you're not using a password manager, write it down in a book, which you keep.
What? But don't say those words.
let's realistically look at this, right? So to someone to get that book, they've got to break into your house to get that book with passcodes. At that point, you've got bigger issues going on than worrying about your security. I'd still argue that's safer than using the same easy password on 10 million different services.
I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Acceptable risk.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you're probably right. And if you take somebody of the older generation, if I look at my grandfather, for example, he's in his late 80s, yeah. you know, nearly 90 or so. He has that problem, remember. He doesn't know how to use Password Manager.
Yeah.
But you're right. He writes down different
As long as they actually just write random characters down or random words and not just have a book with the same password for every obviously.
He writes down different ones, but his memory's going as well, so he can't actually remember, you know, so he has to remember. But
if he can remember, he had it in a book.
He does, and he puts that book somewhere safe in his kind of like, you know,
desk drawer or whatever.
Yeah. But which I appreciate, you're right, is not best practice for you or I or others.
No,
but
for someone that could learn, I mean, if you can learn to use Facebook, you can learn to use a password app.
But it's better really than, not like difficult. You say, it's better than leveraging password 123, rotate 2, rotate 3, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
It is just.
But hey ho.
Yeah.
That's a war we're not winning.
We're not winning that one. No, we're not winning that one. Talking of people who are winning a war, though, then. So you may recall last week we talked about Epic Games, who got banned again from their developer account and were not going to be able to make their brand new shiny store for the E version of iOS, which we had a good conversation at work this week, didn't we? Telling some few people about the new iOS 17.4 things.
Who, DMA and all that kind of stuff.
Who weren't really aware of that, were they? They weren't really sure. Not in the slightest. Which was amusing because we were in Europe. However, then, it seems that there's been a U-turn again, isn't it, from Epic? And they are...
A U-turn or a forced prod?
I think maybe both. So, according to Tim Sweeney, who tweeted on X on the 8th of March... The DMA went through with its first major challenge with Apple banning Epic Games Sweden from competing with the App Store. And the DMA just had its first major victory following a swift inquiry by the European Commission. Apple notified Epic Sweden, the Commission and Epic, that it would relent and restore their access to bring back Fortnite and launch Epic Games Store in Europe under the DMA. So he's saying this is a big win. That was his words, not mine. Big win for the European rule of law, the European Commission, the freedom of developers worldwide. Hashtag free Fortnite. Hashtag go away, Tim.
Apple's statement was a little more...
I'm glad you're going to read that out. You can read Apple's statement.
Following conversations with Epic, they have committed to follow the rules, including our policies. As a result, Epic Sweden AB has been permitted to re-sign the developer agreement and accept it into the Apple Developer Program. So it looks like Epic Games, barring any major catastrophes, will be having an Epic Game Store and bringing Fortnite back to iOS. This is Europe, nowhere else, because they're still banned everywhere else.
Hence Epic Sweden AB, Look, I mean, given the fact that Epic acted like a petulant child, didn't they? They tweeted those pictures and upset Apple. And I know you could argue, right, well, they tweeted a picture. That wasn't the reason they got banned. That was basically the fire. That was the petrol they threw on the fire, wasn't it? And Apple themselves, I think, have had enough, quite frankly. Had enough here. It's like, look, if you can't play by the rules, we are following the letter of the law. We don't like it. We're doing it, but we are following it to the letter, to the extent, you know, we're right up to the edge of it, right? Maybe you could do the same and basically behave. But Epic is just not going to play that.
Watching them with a fine tooth comb, just waiting for the first muck up or breaking of a terms of service, and they'll be out again.
Yeah. Epic are going to, I guarantee you, within 6 months, there'll be something else happen again.
Of course there will. Epic, Tim Sweeney will not be able to help himself about pushing it too far.
No. The key here, though, is that Apple's marketing engine is all powerful. In fact, I'd argue Apple's marketing department is probably the most powerful department in their business, isn't it? The whole messaging around why third-party app stores are dangerous, why companies like Epic are bad, all of that is done marketing, isn't it? You know, and Apple have some arguments. As we talked to some colleagues over there about, you know, Apple have got some arguments around the security of the App Store. And you know what? This has worked quite happily for quite a long time now. But if you introduce the ability to have other stores and you reduce the or you increase the risk and you increase the attack surface, because that's what you're doing now with these additional stores. Now, granted, there is still, we've talked about this before, the Apple review process here, but it's not the same, is it? To the same degree that Apple are doing, no. I think, on other things. And there is also the opportunity that they could be vectors for malware. Now, nobody's saying that's happening. Nobody's saying that's happened yet, of course. We're just, you know, hypothesizing here that they're there. And I could, you could argue, well, Google's been doing this for ages. They have. But despite Google's marketing engine, Google still has more malware and rubbish than iOS does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Apple are just going to be waiting for the very first attack vector that's discovered by this third party to shout about it.
Yeah. I mean, it does.
You told
I,
you so. Mean,
yeah. It, look, this doesn't look good either way for Apple or Epic, no. does it? Really? You know, it both looks pretty poor on both their sides, in my opinion.
Yeah,
realistically, because you've got Apple going, you know, to the naughty child in the corner. You know, if you throw your toys around, then you can't play. And then you've got Epic going, well, you know, it just they're as bad as each other. Absolutely, yeah. as bad as each other. That's there's no other way to look at that. But the argument here is Epic. Epic don't have to play here. They're choosing to play here, aren't they? That's the thing we should be aware of, is that Epic don't have to be on the iOS store. You could argue, why do you, you know, you could, you've run your business quite happily without having Fortnite on iOS for now for a few years and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You don't need to be there, really, you know, but they choose to be there. They want to be there because for them, that's where their customers are. That's not, but it's not a illegal
cash cow for them.
Yeah. It's not a legal point, is it really?
No, it's not. Yeah. No, my thoughts on Epic's Tim Sweeney, so I'm not going to go there again.
No, but there you go. So there was an interesting tidbit, though, wasn't there, that came out the other day about the new piece around the third-party app stores, wasn't it? So if you, Apple have now stated, if you travel outside the EU, or your device, which is registered in the EU and is an EU device for all intents and purposes, if you travel outside for more than 30 days, you lose the ability to update third-party apps, don't you?
I presume that's 30 consecutive days, not 30 days over the span of a year.
No, it's like if you go from now, from the 1st to the 30th, so to speak.
Yeah.
You will lose the ability to update those apps.
It's a tricky one. I kind of think 30 days might be a little short.
So Apple have now published a piece on their support page about alternative app marketplaces in the EU, yeah?
Yeah.
And it goes on all about the notarization process. It talks about the availability. It talks about what happens if the marketplace ceases operations or you delete it. Basically saying, well, it's not, basically, if it goes, that's not
our problem at that point.
And then it goes, if you want to continue getting apps that are approved under Apple's App Store review guidelines, it talks about that. And then it tells you about the eligible countries. And there's some interesting tidbits in here. So France, yeah?
Yeah.
Also includes French Guiana, Guadeloupe, Martinique, Mayenne, Réunion, and Saint Martin, which are all Caribbean islands.
So they're not part of Europe.
Well, they are because they're French territories.
Hmm.
The same, the Azores for Portugal and Madeira, and the Canary Islands for Spain.
Right. Okay.
But yeah. But so, yeah, 30 days. So if you leave the European Union, you can continue to open and use apps that you've previously installed from an alternative app marketplace. Alternative app marketplaces can continue updating those apps for up to 30 days after you leave the EU, and you can continue using alternative app marketplaces to manage previously installed apps. However, you must be in the EU to install alternative marketplaces and new apps.
Ah.
So to do it, you must be physically located in the EU, and your country of region or your Apple ID has to be set to one of the countries or regions. So that's how they're doing it now. So, yeah, interesting, you know, that's their approach on it.
Okay, interesting.
So keeping the theme of breaches, then, let's have a little chat about Microsoft, who have had a pretty bad week, haven't they, to be honest?
Well, yes.
They've had a bit of a bear infestation, haven't they?
There's bears everywhere. yeah, I mean, we heard about this one back in, originally back in, was it last year some point?
I think it was, yeah, yeah.
Where they were breached by Midnight Blizzard, a.k.a. Cozy Bear, a.k.a. APT29, the Kremlin-backed, hacking group. But it wasn't thought to be a huge breach at that point. Like, you know, a couple of email accounts here and there. But they did do an update to a SEC filing the other day, also SEC filing.
So yeah, Securities
Commission. Well, they basically said, yeah, they got access to a lot more systems than we realized, or it's changed over time because they've used the information they got from the first hack to go back in again, and they've got more emails, source code, all sorts of things, haven't they?
They have. So they're saying, so as, to kind of recap, as you say on that, was that they... this, you know, Kremlin, you know, they're Russian-backed, Kremlin-backed, advanced persistent threat actor, as APT29, Cozy Bear, as we more commonly know them. But the new tag, Midnight Blizzard, I hadn't seen them called that before, I have to say. So they were also behind the SolarWinds supply chain attack the other year. And they apparently, as you say, were around and inside, moving laterally through several senior leadership accounts. Now, they haven't named those leaders, have I? Not that I've seen anywhere, which I suppose would be a bit of a name of shame. And they were inside those accounts, and they were reading, you know, internal messages. They were stealing files, belonging to that leadership team. Also, ironically, the cybersecurity team and their legal department as well. And now the information they've stolen from that, they've used to try and take data out. Now, that includes their source code. Now, they must stress that none of it is customer-backed data or customer source code. Now, that's what they're stressing here. It's all internal Microsoft data. But it just feels a bit like, you know, if it's not Microsoft product that's causing CVEs and vulnerabilities, it's now their own issues, isn't it, really?
Well, maybe there's an upcoming product that can help with that.
Well, there was a quote, wasn't there, on the register from CrowdStrike, Adam Mares, who's counter-adversary operations leader at CrowdStrike, who quoted saying, today's 8K filing for Microsoft creates more questions for customers and the industry than it answers. And I'd have to agree with you, Adam. I think this starts to question a lot of things, doesn't it, really?
Yes, it does.
Microsoft is, you know, to use a terrible phrase, the 500-pound gorilla in the room, isn't it, when we talk about security? They are incumbent in most customers. They're incumbent, you know, in nearly most of the Fortune 500 organizations, governments. You know, there are other vendors available who do similar operations, but Microsoft typically provides productivity tools. They're also providing the security tools. Maybe they're also providing the identity and access tools through, is it Entra? Without trying to, you know, without being cynical and say, well, you know, single vendor approach, I'm all for single vendor approach if in a certain vertical, but when it's a single vendor approach for everything.
Yeah,
I think you've got a kind of worry here, haven't you? Because you've got no room to maneuver then, have you?
I've always had the issue that we all sell you the operating system, we'll sell you the services, and we'll sell you the Office Suite and the Azure stuff, but then we'll make you pay extra to have the security on top. Why is the security not baked in the first place? Or if you know how you need to secure this, why isn't that in the actual product? I think there's a conflict of interest there.
There is. You know, you've got no objectivity here, have you, really, of like, what is, you know, how you see, if you're the vendor is like, oh yeah, we've got some security vulnerabilities this week, you know, they've come out from Office, you know, again, hang on, guys, don't you make Office? Yeah, but that's another team.
Where's the incentive to do the good job on the coding and the security of Office if we can just make more money by selling them the security software to fix the bugs that should have been fixed in the product?
I'm sure that's not the case at all, and I'm confident there are good people at Microsoft who must bang their heads against a proverbial brick wall every time this happens, and, you know, especially from the product perspective. And for those that work in the security department, I'm sure it must be highly frustrating to have those conversations with your clients. I really, really get that. For those of us outside of Microsoft and the industry, it's a good talking point. We can't deny that.
Yes, that's true.
This does worry you that they're not able to secure their own house. But we're asking, you know, to secure our houses, aren't they? Yeah. So, you know, their final quote, wasn't it? The Midnight Blizzard's ongoing attack characterized by sustained significant commitment of the threat actor's resources, coordination, and focus, Microsoft said. By using information it has attained to accumulate a picture of areas to attack and enhance its ability to do so, this reflects what's become a more broadly and unprecedented global threat landscape, especially in terms of sophisticated nation-state attacks. Well, yeah, I mean, Microsoft here clearly is under attack from the Russian government. You know, that is not a statement from, you know, somebody else. That is a reality.
They're not the only one.
But how do you defend against that as a private organization? That is quite something, really. You've got to consider
AI.
That is a good way to go. Let's not get into that conversation right now. But yes, you're probably right. AI perhaps is the
way forward. Here.
And I'm sure. AI. Yeah, but then won't the bad guys get AI as well?
Ah, and then, but then it's DNS. No, wait a second. No, that's the wrong one.
Oh, okay. Let's move on to another Microsoft story. Again, I told you the irony was coming thick and fast. So, Microsoft has launched its AI Copilot for security. Well, actually, technically, it's launching next month, but it's kind of available now if you pay some money. But they're going to be charging it on a per hourly basis, isn't it? So, $4 per hour of usage. I couldn't resist putting this in after that conversation. A nice segue with AI.
No. So it is powered by OpenAI, their GPT-4, and Microsoft's own security models. Whether that's a good thing or not, we'll let you, the viewers, decide on that one. But yeah, it will allow you to kind of get summaries of security incidents and threats using natural language queries. It includes collaboration features like pin boards, so you can analyze files, code, and events together and using AI to help with that. But as you said, $4 an hour. Which is quite a departure from Microsoft to be doing kind of per hour billing on a service like that. Is it Office Copilot? That's around $30 a user per month, I think.
I believe so, yeah.
But I imagine it's probably quite hard for Microsoft to come up with an idea of how expensive it should be based on a monthly charge. So an hour one's probably easier for them. It's quite variable, I imagine.
It is, and I think this is really introductory pricing, isn't it, to be fair? So, as you said, this is powered by OpenAI, GPT-4. By the way, do they just announced GPT-4.5 now?
Oh, have they?
And it's also trained using Microsoft's specific security model, which is where they've pumped it full of all the signals, isn't it, that they're getting from Defender and Sentinel and all that kind of stuff that they've got here. And it's really there to help, I guess, security professionals do their daily jobs, isn't it, really? You can do natural language, you can give it files to analyze, you can ask it to look for code. There's a log file, you know, going forward here. Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of Copilot. I think there's a great piece here. You know, this is generational AI. I wouldn't necessarily, well, generational / specific AI, isn't it, because of the use case here.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. Most people would rather have this as a consumption model because it's not something you're going to need to use every hour of every day, is it? You're going to be doing something and you go, right, I'm going to drop into Copilot now. Can you check out this file? I've just pulled it from this device. Does it have any reference to a threat actor we've seen before? Or this code, you know, is there any vulnerabilities in this code stack that we're about to put through, you know, in our CI/CD pipeline? I'm guessing these are the kind of things you can do and much, much more. This is the way forward. I absolutely believe the co-pilots, we are going to see these hand over fist now everywhere. You know, the organization we work for, we're rolling these out, aren't we, slowly, in a similar approach. And everybody, you know, I think we talked about this before, isn't it? That, you know, the co-pilot really is an evolution of that chat bot, isn't it? You get at the bottom of the screen and you log into your airline or whatever, isn't it? Or your bank.
Hi, I'm Clippy. How can I help you today?
It's very much so, yeah. Clippy on steroids. I haven't had a go on this. It launches officially on April 1st. I may have a go. I don't know. I'm not sure what the recommendations are, whether you've got to be already a customer of their security pieces. I haven't checked that piece out.
Do you think they'll be giving it free of charge to their own developers?
I say no.
Really? They could do with it.
they probably could do, but I reckon not. The question you've got to ask yourself is, are they using it internally?
Yes, that's what I meant, for their own developers internally.
I see your point. Yeah.
Or do you have to get that signed off by your manager?
Yeah, good luck. But yes, Copilot has launched then, been announced. Did you see as well, by the way, they finally announced merging the teams? Because you know, at the moment we've got, you know, Microsoft Teams allows you to do multiple accounts. There's Teams for work and work and play, doesn't it, or something like that? Come on, isn't it?
Yep.
Work and home. Well, the new version is going to remove that branding now.
It's coming out. Are we just going to have one Teams client to rule them all?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yes, one Teams client to rule them all.
We've got Teams Classic, Teams New, and then
Work on School,
whatever it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, that will make life easier.
I have to say, it does work better now. So I'm logged into two different Teams accounts, and I can swap between them without logging out. And I have to say, I could have done with that a couple of years ago when they first launched it.
Yes. It'd be nice if my work machine could update to the latest version and not be pinned to the old one.
Yeah, we can't have everything, my friend.
No. It's been disabled by the admin. I thought it was going to end of support at the end of this month.
They're going to have to solve that problem pretty sharpish, aren't they?
Yeah, I would have thought so. But we'll see. We'll see.
So then, the other big news of the day is that SpaceX have completed their third Starship flight test. And it has been... I'm going to go out on a limb here. It has been a success, isn't it? I don't know.
I've been in a meeting all afternoon and didn't get to watch it. So I am still playing catch up.
So, okay, well, I will tell you a little bit about it. I'll let you, why don't you tee us up, though, on what was happening today then and what they were looking to achieve with the...
Yeah, of course. So it was scheduled for some time after 8 a.m. ET this morning. They had a 110-minute window to do their launch, which they obviously apparently did. But what they were trying to test this time was a successful ascent burn on both stages, opening and closing of Starship's payload doors, a propellant transfer demonstration during the upper stage coast phase. I'm not sure what that actually means. And also, interesting, the first ever relight of a Raptor engine while in space. So letting it go out and then reigniting it. And a controlled re-entry of Starship. Now, I haven't watched this, so I don't know how many of those were actually successful or they got to test.
So, spoiler alert, it launched. So they launched Starship on the Super Heavy, and it pretty much went to plan. I didn't watch it all live, but I caught what comes in. The 33 Raptor engines of the Super Heavy booster were lit, and it launched at 8:25 Central Time out of Texas, isn't it? So it seemed to go fine. They had complete separation, you know, from the staging.
Yep.
The booster came back down to Earth. But there was a loss of control as the booster came back through the descent phase. And apparently not all of the engines relit and do that. So the booster came down. Mm. So the flight path was out of Texas, across the Gulf of Mexico, across all the way down, you know, southerly path. Yeah. With an impact in the Indian Ocean off the coast of Australia. When I say off the coast, some distance off the coast.
50 metres from the beach.
Yeah. So one thing I will say before we go any further is apparently they had no plans to recover or reuse the vehicles used today. So neither the Super Heavy nor the Starship.
Okay.
Yeah. So they didn't
control landing or anything like that.
No, so they took it up into orbit. They managed to get it through the staging, as we said. The booster crashed back down into the Indian Ocean. Apparently, it was reasonably successful.
Yeah.
They demonstrated the opening of the doors. They did the propellant transfer. But there was a couple. I noticed on the tweets there was, and on the images, something seemed to be leaking from Starship, or venting, I suppose is the correct word, isn't it? Really? They didn't do the Raptor restart. Never said why, they didn't do that at all. What was really cool, I should add, is that they leveraged Starlink to provide HD video from the Starship.
Nice.
And then they got video all the way up until re-entry with the Starship, and we saw Starship's wings unfold, or the flaps come out, and they to adjust it, which had never been seen before. And the other thing is, they broke some records today, because that was the largest ever flying reusable spacecraft to come back into a Earth's atmosphere. Sorry.
Okay, she is big.
It is big. It's bigger than the shuttle.
Shuttles aren't small.
But as they came in, they lost telemetry from Starlink and from the satellite tracking network that is used by other operators, including the U.S. government. Okay. They lost both at the same time. However, Starship, the feed cut out. They did. They were saying they think they may have lost the vehicle. They didn't. You know, they were very quick to stress we weren't going to recover it. That wasn't the plan. Blah blah blah. Yeah. But it does appear that they lost the craft. But given the fact that they got everything else out of it, realistically, I'm going to say this was a success.
That was a winning game, wasn't it?
Yeah, that I think they reckon they lost control of it as it came back in. So they need to fix re-entry, otherwise this isn't going to
But I mean, how many launches did it take to get the Falcons going consistently? More than three, I'm sure.
Must have done. I mean, this is space is dangerous, as we've always said, you know, and this is fail fast, fail quick, isn't it? Mantra, you know.
Yeah.
And SpaceX are pretty impressive when you come when you look at the Falcons, yeah.
Yeah.
Falcons themselves, 308 launches, 266 landings, and 239 reflights of those boosters. And the Falcon Heavies have done 9 launches, 17 landings, and 14 reflights.
How do you do 9 launches and 17 landings?
Well, there's three stacks, isn't there? They've got the central
right.
Bit,
okay.
And two, yeah.
I was like, trying to do the maths on that. I was like, that doesn't
yeah,
work.
Yeah, no. Right. And then sorry. Starship, and then like you say, Starship. We're at three launches here. You know, yep. First one obviously they blew up the whole launch pad, didn't they?
And got a surrounding area.
Second one they kind of blew up the ship, didn't they?
Yeah.
And this one, you know, they got it into space.
Into space, it did a number of tests. Yeah, I mean, definitely a success.
You know, and that super heavy booster, you know, is a massive bit of kit, you know, massive. It carries, you know, when I was reading it, I think they said with the booster and the Starship, the super heavy and the Starship, they loaded it with 4,300 metric tons of propellant.
Okay. That's yeah,
you know, and the fact that they've lost this one again. I mean, obviously it's expensive, but it's impressive. You know, the plan is, you know, they want to launch these starships and put them in space so they can, and then they can connect them together and have one which is not a passenger starship, but one is like a flying fuel tank, and they can then transfer fuel from that into the starship itself.
That was clever.
Yeah, impressive. So, I mean, look, it was very cool seeing on the video, if you get a chance, and it should be in the show notes, the flaps or the wings come out of Starship to show it kind of, you know, as it comes through the plasma field, you see it kind of adjusting, you know, the flight path with it. It was very cool. And I think what they said were, with the shuttle, wings are heavy and expensive. So the fact that they can use flaps... and of course, they're going to land Starship using the rockets, aren't they? Which obviously the shuttle didn't do.
Yep.
That's going to be you know, something else. So having these flaps come out was quite impressive, so to speak. You know, on the
definitely going to have to go and watch that.
Yeah, and Starship, and using Starlink to get the information back from Starship is very cool as well. But you know, what a good way to demonstrate your capabilities. You know.
Yeah, you use it all together.
Do you know how many Starlink satellites there are now?
Hundreds and hundreds.
So there are 5,504 Starlink satellites.
Blimey.
Out of which 5,442 are operational.
All right. Have the others just failed or not been brought online yet?
I think there's some failures in that. Yeah.
I suppose it's to be expected.
But do you know how many I forgot? I can't remember. Do you know how many they plan to launch?
Is it like 12,000 or
42,000?
Ooh, that's an awful lot of stuff up there.
That is an awful lot of stuff. So apparently, so I read an interesting fact to kind of finish this piece off earlier. So the data up until the data of November 2022, yeah. So a couple years out of date now. There were 14,450 satellites had been launched in history up to that point and at that point in time 6,800 were currently active. So that was 2022,
right?
So now add on top of that the first Starlink satellites were launched in 2018. They were the test ones, and then the first 60 satellites were launched in 2019,
right?
So you think they've been, and that's gone exponentially upwards, hasn't it? So a lot of the Starlink constellation makes up a large chunk of all of the grand total of satellites ever launched.
Blimey. And there's going to be competitors as well doing the same at some point.
How we're ever going to fly.
How are we going to leave the planet?
you know, because you're just going to be blanketed. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? Well, that's probably a good place for us to round up for today. Bit of a shorter show today, folks, but hopefully some interesting stories. I know for us, the Starlink one particularly was the highlight of the week. And hopefully we can have an update next week once we know what has happened to the Starlink. Starship, not Starlink. Too many stars here. That's the problem, isn't it? on what's happening there as well. And hopefully the Tech Rant Rumour Mill will be back in action next week with some new rumours. Of course, you can find us on X/Twitter at Weekly Tech Rant. All of our show notes at techrant.online. And of course, wherever you get your podcasts. So with that, I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good one all.